Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back to an Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. This is an episode where I answer many of the listener questions that have been coming into me throughout the week. And on this particular Friday, I am going to talk about online risks. Now, there are two things that come up over and over and over again in questions in my practice on our show, and those two things right now are mental health and online activities. We're talking about things like social media and cyberbullying and phone use and all of those things. And we will continue to visit them because there is so much to talk about. These are two issues where we are seeing things that we never saw before as parents. When we were growing up, whether you're a millennial, whether you're Gen X, or whether you're a baby boomer, or you're a grandparent raising your kids and you're from the greatest generation, we did not have a mental health crisis like we do today, and we just did not have technology that we had to deal with like we do today. So it leaves us feeling, as parents, I think, afraid, honestly, just scared to death a lot of the times. We feel insecure and we just feel overwhelmed. And a lot of times what I see, and I tend to do this myself, you just want to be an ostrich and kind of bury your head in the sand and, hey, I don't even want to think about that. Like, let's just let sleeping dogs lie. But this is what happens, parents, when we take that approach where we're just going to respond to threats as they come. You're really blindsided. And a lot of times, the truth is, the risk is so great for what kids could encounter online that we have to take a proactive approach. We have to drop that not my kid mantra, like thinking, oh, my kid would never do that. Because kids are kids. They're vulnerable. They're at risk for making foolish decisions because this is how their brains work. And when we were growing up, there was a little buffer in the physicality of having to take that risk. If we were going to go and do something dumb, we were going to go meet up with friends. You might encounter your friend's mom who's going to get suspicious, or somebody, you know, in the community is going to see you out riding around. But here, the risk is so fast. It goes at the tap of a finger on a screen, and the ability to make decisions is so much faster than their brain is able to process. And that's why it's important for us to initiate discussion, to intentionally expose our kids to things. Now, I know we talk about this a lot, and a lot of parents think, I do not want to expose my kids to things that they have not yet been exposed to. But here I would propose this. And actually, we have had Hillary Morgan Ferrer on the show with Mama Bear Apologetics earlier in the fall, and she is coming back in January to talk about this more. And this is something that she and I agree about strongly, that when our kids learn about threats in this world, their first exposure to it should be from us as parents, in a way that's developmentally appropriate, in a way that positions us as the experts, and in a way that doesn't make them feel fear or shame, which is a lot of times what can happen if they hear about something from someone else. We need to constantly open that door and say, hey, I'm ahead of the curve on you on most things. I have more experience than you. I have more skin in this game than you do. I am invested in protecting your safety. I am looking on the horizon for threats that can come your way. And if there are threats that I don't anticipate, you can come and tell me those, and in partnership, we will look at those together. Now, why am I getting questions about this week? Well, we're in the middle of the holiday time where kids are off from school. So what do? They go straight to their devices. Now, parents, have you had any arguments with your kids this week? Oh, I assure you, I have not, because my children are perfect and we never have arguments about this. No, I'm kidding. This is definitely a struggle that we have. And frankly, that I have a hard time getting off my phone and setting boundaries. And I continually ask my family to give me accountability in that, even when I may resent it just a little bit. But when we have kids who are off from school, the first thing that they do is they crave that social connection. They don't know, what are their friends doing? Are there people going out without them? And they are looking for FOMO. Now, this is an acronym for fear of missing out. If you ask any Gen Z kid about FOMO, they will gladly tell you, yep, it's real, and yep, I feel it. And sometimes they can even feel like, maybe I don't want to go to this party, I don't want to go to this social event. But then they see things happening online and they think, but I missed out. And we actually have a scientific scale where we measure FOMO as a measure of anxiety. So this is a very real thing. So you may need some digital detoxing over the break for sure, both for you as parents and as your kids. And here's what I want to tell you, parents, is I want to walk you through some of these questions that I'm getting about specific threats online. And I want to walk you through how to prevent harm from occurring, how to intervene early if harm has occurred, and what to do if you experience the unimaginable and you find yourself in a position where you think, I never saw this coming. I want to help you find a space for grace and a road for hope. Those are really important things. So, having set it up that way, let's dive into some of the threats that kids can experience online. Now, as parents, when we have our kids home for the holidays, yeah, I talked last week about curfews a lot, and I'd encourage you to go back and listen to that, because if you missed it, I actually never adopted a curfew with any of my four kids. Shocking, I know, but it's true. But there are some boundaries that are really important. And when our kids are going out, we're asking all the questions and we're really concerned, right? We know what to say. Well, who's going to be there? Well, what parent will, or what responsible adult will be there? Or, you know, how are you going to get there? Or what are you going to do? And we have this list of questions because we're concerned. But then the honest truth is, a lot of times we turn around and we let them walk off into their bedroom and invite 2,000 strangers into their most personal or intimate space, or however many followers that they have online, where they're interacting with people you don't know, in a place where they feel safe, in a place where they can let their guard down. This is really important. So let's just talk generally about some safety precautions to have. It is a good idea to make sure, people ask me all the time, what monitoring software do you use to monitor your kids' cell phones? And I can tell you that monitoring software is a great tool, and there are a lot out there, and I don't get paid to endorse any of them, but there are a lot, and probably the most common one is Bark, and that is a great tool. And I have spoken with some of the founders of Bark before on the podcast. But here's the thing that I want to emphasize. It is never a substitution. Those softwares are never a substitution for the power of relationship, the power of open communication. So if you're relying on those tools and that's all that you use, then that really creates a transactional kind of environment where it's kind of right and wrong, law and order, crime and punishment. Are you doing all of the right things? Nope, you violated this boundary, don't do it. And watching those things and kind of feeling like you're policing their activity instead of guiding it. And that is really important. So some policing is important. So what I do is accountability checks on my kids' phones. They know, my favorite mantra is, they have an iPhone or whatever kind of phone, but I pay, I say. If I'm paying for the technology, I have the right to open it up and to look at it in any way, shape, or form. And I think this is a good life lesson for them to know. Anytime you're financially dependent on someone, there's going to be a price that is expected for that. And that, for me, is I'm paying for their life. I'm paying for their phone. I have open access to their information. And they know that I can just walk up at any time and hold out my hand and say, hey, let's do a phone check. Let's look and see what you've been up to. And I'll look through some of their text messages. And I think just knowing that I can do that, you know, they're going to be aware of what they're doing. Now, it is possible and it is common for kids, if they know that you're going to check it, well, great. They'll just delete those things frequently that they don't want you to see. So again, all of these things are not meant to police as much as it is to open doors to conversation and to allow for accountability. And so those things are important when we're looking at it. The other thing that my husband and I model is that every kid in our house has our password to our phone. They know what the password is, and they can open up our phones and look at our phones at any time. And anything that we have there is an open book. And that's important, I think, to model that back. We also don't use our phones in secret spaces. So for our kids, that their bedroom is a boundary there. Again, that is just a protection measure in so many different ways. First of all, when they're in their bedroom, that is a place for sleep. That is a place for rest. And when you have your phone in there, especially at night, this FOMO thing is a really big deal. So I can't tell you how many kids I see in practice who come in with sleep problems and they can't go to sleep, they can't stay asleep. And once I start asking them about screen time, the answer is plain. But here's the thing, they don't want the cure. They don't want the remedy for it, because I'll say, okay, clearly your phone is disrupting your sleep. If you're using your screen, and this goes for us too, parents, if you're using your screen right before bedtime, that LED light or whatever kind of, you know, blue light that you have, it is activating your brain in a way that is not conducive to sleep. So we are stimulating our brains and then we wonder why we can't get them to calm down. So we need to stop electronic use at least an hour before bedtime. And then when kids have their phone right by their bed, they'll say, oh yeah, but I don't check it in the night. I tell them, open up your social media. Let's look at it. Let's look at your activity log. And when we look at that, they don't even realize. They're not lying to me. They're not saying, oh no, I don't do that. Please don't find out that I do. They don't realize. It's so ingrained and so subconscious that they're just looking at their notifications in the middle of the night. The other thing that happens is we train ourselves, if we have our phone in our bedroom, that it's the last thing you touch before you go to bed, and it's the first thing you touch in the morning. You are just automatically, let me reach for that. And we had last week on Crystal Payne, the money-saving mom, and now the time-saving mom, and she was talking about how she doesn't open her laptop before she opens her Bible in the morning. And that's just one idea for an accountability measure, because so many times our kids or we'll say, I don't have time to read my Bible. I don't have time to pray or do a devotional. But you've had time to watch 57 cat videos or crafting videos or sports blooper videos. And so just open up. If you have an iPhone, it's really easy. You get a weekly notification of your screen time. And having some accountability and some discussion as a family is share your screen time. And what are you spending most of your time on? And is that really reflective of your priorities and your goals for the next year? Now, if you're wanting to invest in your kids as a New Year's resolution, I encourage you to look at your smartphone. I've talked before about looking at your calendar and your credit card as measures of your priorities. Looking at the time you're spending on your smartphone is really important. Is it on calling or texting your friends or family, or is it on scrolling mindlessly through videos? That can be a real measure of accountability. And so those are just some of the basic things that we have. We also have tech-free times and tech-free zones. So our tech-free zones are meal times. Everybody's allowed to call each other out if we have a phone at the table. No phones at the table. That's a family rule that we've agreed upon. I don't have phones in the car. I make my kids put their phone away when they are riding with me in the car. Hello, captive audience. I don't want to talk to a kid who's got AirPods in and who is totally phone snubbing or fubbing me. I want their full attention. Now, when we come come back, we'll dive into some of these scarier questions and some of the cyberbullying and more serious things that kids can encounter online. You won't want to miss it. We'll talk about catfishing, trickery, outing, and human trafficking. So important things. We'll see you after the break.
Preborn celebrates that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. Roe has been responsible for the slaughter of over 63 million babies. Now the decision to abort a child will be left in the hands of the states, and sadly, abortions will continue in the most liberal states. Over the past 16 years, Preborn has positioned their clinics in the top abortion cities where 50% of abortions occur. Preborn's work of saving babies' lives continues at an even greater level as they save babies' lives and defend their centers from the radical hate groups who want to shut them down. Preborn's response is dependent on you, the pro-life community. Be a part of rescuing lives and changing hearts for Christ. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 will help to rescue five babies' lives. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com. All gifts are tax deductible.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, friends, to another Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. And this week, when we have kids off from school and glued to their devices nonstop, it can seem like we have a potential for increased risk. And it's always a great time to open the door to conversation, not waiting till something happens, because in reality, if your child has a smartphone, it's not if something will happen, it's when something will happen. And what we want to do is make sure that that something that happens when it happens is minor, it's quickly caught and quickly mitigated. Now, in the first segment, we talked a lot about just some general safety tips and prevention strategies, and I have talked a lot more about those in past episodes that you can go back and find. I've also addressed this extensively in my book, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide for Parents and Teens to Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues. So I answer other questions there, like, when should my kid get social media? When should they get a phone? How do I know if they're mature enough to handle a social media account? And all of those answers are in there. So I encourage you to check that out. Now, today we're going to talk about some more significant risks that kids face with that online use. Now, you may be thinking, but Jessica, my kid doesn't have a smartphone, so this doesn't apply to me, and I'm so relieved. I hate to tell you that this can apply to your child, even if they don't have a smartphone, even if they don't have social media, because the truth is they're living in a world where literally 98% of kids have a smartphone, and more than 90% of kids have access to social media. Now, I see a lot of times where and parents will put that boundary down and say, you're not allowed to have social media. And then they find out that their child has had a secret social media account. In fact, I have a friend who shall remain nameless, who had a daughter who created an online account and had a name. And of course, her mom was right on this, and her online name, which will still protect her on anonymity, was, for whatever reason, Vera. And now we laugh about it all the time because we think it was caught early and that poor child will forever be known as Vera. But thankfully, her mom was on it and was able to interact early. And this is a great kid, a wonderful kid, but kids who see social media as normative. And it's normal for them also to hide things from you because they don't want to get in trouble. That is how their brain is wired to think about justice. So if you have a kid who you've discovered has had a secret social media account, because what will happen is their friend can create an extra account. They can easily toggle back and forth between the accounts. They can loan them a phone to use when they're at their house or at school. This happens all the time. If that happens to you, don't panic. Don't think, oh my goodness, my child has violated every boundary we have. They have broken all the trust that we have. Just recognize that you have a good kid who made a poor choice. And man, we can be good adults who make poor choices too. I know that I have made poor choices this week, for sure. In the ways that I have spoken to my family, I've lost my temper. I have done things that are wrong. And so we need to not let fear drive our response there. Just talk to them, open up conversation, and just say, I'm sorry that this has happened, and this is hurtful because it's a breach of trust. So let's talk about how did it happen. Go back and don't look at it as a failure of their morals, a failure of their spiritual values. Those are much more complex concepts that don't get fully formed until later on in life. Look at this as a failure of decision making. Your brain wasn't equipped. When we say, what were you thinking? Just say, your brain was not yet equipped to make this decision. So let's walk through it and let me help support you and give you some resources and tools so that you can mature and grow and strengthen your decision making. So I want you to know if that's happened, you are not alone for sure. Now, when kids are online, whether you know it or not, they are experiencing a level of aggression that we had just not experienced as kids. And now, when we see teens that are having online aggression or they're seeing it, first of all, it's happening 24/7. When we were experiencing these things, like, we could lock ourselves away to some extent from this kind of exposure or treatment. Maybe that was your house, you know, when you were home, you were safe if you had a safe home, or maybe that was a summer camp, or you went to grandma's house, or somewhere you didn't have to worry about Big Mike beating you up behind the school for your lunch money, or Mean Gene, you know, eviscerating your outfit. If we were out of sight, out of mind. But today, we may not even know who the bully is because they're hiding behind online profiles. So there's a degree of anonymity. And I'll talk about some of the ways that they do this. And the other thing is that we may have been humiliated in front of our school, but kids today are humiliated, and it can go viral in front of audiences of millions. And as parents, honestly, it can make us so sad to think about the ways that childhood has changed. I mean, we didn't have lockdown drills and training on school shootings, and we worry about those kinds of things. We worry about somebody walking into a public environment with a weapon. But the truth is, parents, that there is a weapon in our child's environment daily that's carried in their backpack or their pocket of nearly every kid, and it's far more dangerous and deadly. And that is the smartphone. And you know, the other ways that kids can be exposed to this, even if they don't have a phone, is that they do something called shoulder surfing. If they don't have a phone, they're going to try to look at every phone that comes because they're curious. They just want to know what is going on. And they can still be bullied online and then be told about that bullying. I mean, there just really is no escape. What we used to have as slam books are now online anonymous forums. I know this has happened in my own kids' school, and where they have had this slam book online, and it was run what they thought was anonymously, but nothing on the internet is ever truly anonymous. And they start taking unflattering photos of kids who don't even know it, just eviscerating their outfit or their physical features or laughing at them and making fun of them. And your teen has absolutely no control over that. They are at the mercy of a renegade paparazzi who is ready to post with enthusiastic onlookers and influencers and keyboard warriors and trolls. I mean, they know that anyone can take a picture of them anytime and post it without their permission. And then we wonder why our kids are so anxious and thinking about it. And, you know, my daughter, my oldest daughter, right before the social media craze, she had a slumber party at the house. And, you know, this one of the girls came down and she asked me at like 1 o'clock in the morning for a Sharpie. Well, now I'm a mom who's been around the block a time or two. And I said, what do you need a Sharpie for at 1 o'clock in the morning? She actually told me, I'm going to draw a mustache on your daughter's face while she's sleeping. I said, no, that's not going to happen. And I had this lovely little talk with her about how that wasn't appropriate. Well, guess what? She still went and found a Sharpie and still did it. Like, this is how kids make decisions. Now, thankfully, we were able to navigate that and to talk about forgiveness and treating each other with honor. But I do wonder what would have happened if they had had a smartphone and taken a picture and posted that. As it was, it just remained in this group of, you know, 6 or 8 little girls, and we managed it here. But a smartphone would have alerted the whole school to that. And when you have images, a picture is worth 1,000 words. That doesn't go away. Now, the other things that we can see are cyberbullying, and this is one form of that. It can occur through computers, through cell phones, through other electronic devices. But here's the thing, when your child experiences aggression, bullying, just downright meanness online, it does impact their health. It causes psychological trauma that will manifest itself through their body, because kids do not know how to process psychological trauma that they have. So their body will start to process it for them. And that will manifest as headaches, as stomach aches, as panic attacks that look like they can't breathe, as trouble sleeping, as appetite changes, as weight gain or weight loss. Those things can all happen. So that's something to watch out for. Now, the other thing is that when we have online bullying, that aggressor has a power differential. They're either more tech savvy, they're an influencer with more followers, and what they have as their weapon is the ability to inflict social or emotional harm. And that is what they do. They can become anonymous. And when we see things that are said online, there, you can read the comments of any news story and you will see, you know, I don't think that you would have said that to somebody to their face, but yet we say those things online. So other forms of cyberbullying that we can see through either anonymous or not, are an online slam book or something called blogo-bullying, which is just creating a blog that basically demeans and embarrasses someone. E-intimidation, so that's posting or sharing threats to someone. That griefing, now this is something important, and I get a lot of questions about that. This is cyberbullying during video games. Now, we talk a lot about messaging and the harm that can happen there on social media, but we forget about video games, and many of these have a live chat, either a vocal, like talking to each other, or chatting through sending text messages, and you can speak synchronously with people from all over the world. And not too long ago, I was invited to speak to a group of 8th graders in their technology class on social media safety. So I asked this group of 8th graders, how many of you play video games? Almost all of them do. And I said, how many of you have been contacted by a stranger through that video game who has said or done something that made you uncomfortable? Parents, I'm telling you, almost every kid in that room raised their hand and nodded their head, and they're looking at me with eyes as wide as saucers. And then I said, okay, how many of you shared this information with your parents? And every single hand in the room went down. No one had told their parents about it. Now, it's not because they're bad kids or because they're lying or they're trying to hide it or they're relishing in this online activity. But I know, and you know as parents what their number one fear is. If I tell you about this, you're not going to let me play this video game. And then how else am I going to connect with my friends? And there's a little online addiction that can happen there. It's so easy. And I am not pointing the finger, because I can be addicted to some online element just as easy as the next person. And I feel that tendency there. So we can't forget about the danger that it can occur through video games. And I've shared this story before. One day in my practice, I had a 9-year-old who was addicted to video games. I'm just going to say it like it is. He had an addiction. And his mother was so frustrated that she finally walked in and just unplugged it and said, you know, that's it. Like, I'm cutting the cord. Well, he took the game console and attacked her with it physically. and had to be admitted to an inpatient facility. And this was deeply disturbing to me. And so I was talking to my kids pretty sanctimoniously about it, honestly. And, you know, just saying like how, oh, you know, these video games and this social media can just be addictive for kids. And my youngest son was listening to me and being very polite and receptive. And then he just looked at me and he said, well, you know, Mom, Facebook is just Fortnite for adults. And I thought, ouch, that is so true. You know, as adults, we look at these Fortnite dances that are done and, or, you know, the dab or whatever. I'm sure I'm saying this wrong. Whatever other dances come out of, you know, social media game or video games. And again, I'm sure every Gen Z is listening to this and groaning and saying, no, that's not right. But my point is that we all can be addicted to those things, and we justify our own use as parents. While we're on Facebook at our kids' baseball game, at their school event, you know, even during church, and yet we're telling them, oh, get off your phone, don't play those video games. So always we have to think about ourselves. Now, other things that can happen is stealing your password and using that for identity theft. And I've talked about that in previous episodes about a new feature on the new iPhone operating system called Name Drop, where it's very easy for kids to give their information. And so if you want more information about that, you can check out my social media or the one of the previous Friday episodes where I talked about that. Now, I did encounter password theft as a nursing instructor, and this was several years ago, but one of the faculty that I worked with had asked me, he had told me, I think your student stole my password and watched pornography at work. And I thought, oh, that sounds like a likely story. Okay, sure. So I call in the student and I say, this is what you've been accused of. And the student says, oh yeah, I did do that. Is that wrong? And I thought, oh my goodness, it really opened my eyes to see how normalized it can be to share passwords, to share that online experience and to normalize those things. Now, I get a lot of questions about catfishing. Now, catfishing is not what you're thinking right now. It's not what you did with your grandpa. You can hear your teen saying, okay, boomer, right now. Or if you know, you know. If you don't, that's all Gen Z slang. But really, the truth is catfishing is a fake online persona to lure someone into a false romantic relationship or friendship with a goal of blackmail or theft. Now, MTV actually, and I'm not endorsing MTV, I'm telling you the facts that they have a show exploring these stories. Other high profile cases include Monty Teo, who was a Notre Dame football player and Heisman candidate, who was catfished by someone proposing to be his girlfriend. And it was devastating. So this really can happen to anyone. It also happened to Kimberly Williams Paisley, a popular actress and wife of Brad Paisley, who was catfished by someone who convinced her that her daughter had cancer. And Kimberly was deeply invested in this. Now, when we come back, we'll talk more about how to be some of these threats that are there and how to be safe and how to respond. You don't want to miss it. This will be the most important advice of this hour. I'll see you on the other side of the break.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to this Friday edition of Ask Dr. Nurse Mama. I am answering all questions about online threats, including cyberbullying and social media, and what you can do to keep your kids safe, especially when they're home from school or their normal activities and they have increased online activity and exposure. Before the break, I was talking about catfishing, and that can be actually a documentary that it may be appropriate to watch with your older children so they're aware of what can happen, and they recognize that the online world is not as real as it appears. Now, we have to understand that kids' brains are wired to be very literal. They accept things at face value. When someone tells them, hey, I'm a friend of a friend, and I know someone, and I go to the school, and I'm a 14-year-old boy, kids think that. They don't automatically think like our parents' skeptical brains thinking, you are probably a 45-year-old in another country who's, you know, a predator or something like that. They don't think that. Other things that people can kids can experience online in addition to catfishing is something called flaming. Now, this is a direct and personal online interaction that really hurts the recipient. And in simple words, it's a nasty gram. So flaming is like just basically like, ooh, that's fire. You burned them. A sick burn or a roast is where this term comes from. One of my teen patients told me that her peers perpetually flamed her and they always added the hashtag loser. And you know what? She came into my practice with that carved into her arm as a form of self-harm. Now, as we get further into this segment, I will be talking about some things that are really tough to hear. So if you have little ears, it would be a good time to pause this, listen to it later, or to make sure that you put in your headphones and that you're listening, because we got to talk about some really tough things before we leave this. Now, I've talked about cyber stalking one of these Friday shows, and so you can go back and listen to that. But that is something we're seeing an increase of and something that we're concerned about. Trolling is just hanging out in online forums and leaving comments intended to provide a negative emotional response. And, you know, trolling, kids can get a lot of attention for clever trolling. And there are some companies who use this, and I gave some examples of this. So for example, these happened on Twitter, which can be an absolute cesspool, but they can happen on any social media account. So Old Spice, the deodorant company, they troll Taco Bell and they say, why is that fire sauce not made with any real fire? That seems like false advertising. To which Taco Bell responded back, is your deodorant really made with old spices? Or here's a Twitter user tweeting at McDonald's, how much does a Big Mac cost? Wendy's responds back, your dignity. And you know, here's another example. A Twitter user tweeted at Moon Pie, your time is wasted on social media accounts. And Moon Pie responds back, buddy, it's Saturday night and you're talking to a marshmallow sandwich on the internet. Now, if you are honest, those things are funny, but how do kids know the difference between funny and not funny, funny and hurtful? That line is very gray. And when we're modeling behavior like this, like it's okay to troll someone, we have to always remember that if the person that you're joking with doesn't think it's funny, then it's not funny. And we have to make sure that we're honoring people. Now, other things that can happen are, of course, human trafficking. I'm not going to dive into that too much here because we are going to talk about that a lot in January. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, but I do have several podcast episodes. Now, if you go back and listen to the Archive podcast, you will find those episodes from last summer on human trafficking, if that's something you want to know more about. Now, as we start to close our time here, I'm going to share with you a really tough story, but a very important learning experience. And I'm going to read this to you from chapter 3 of my book. This is a true story. And from my perspective, the larger-than-life smiling face of a beautiful 12-year-old girl shined down on me from the oversized screen on the conference stage. This was the first time I saw Megan. Her mother took the podium and shared Megan's story of being severely bullied at school, to the point her parents actually changed her school. But as is the case with most bullying, it exposed and exploited the deepest insecurities that she had. And after experiencing social rejection there, Megan was befriended online by a boy in their community who was homeschooled. And he just said he was a friend of a friend. And she had never met this boy named Josh, but he was very kind to her. Now, her parents monitored this budding relationship closely on social media. They read every message that came in. They gave very close observation. But after a time, this friendship just soured without explanation. And this boy began to send really negative messages telling Megan everyone hated her. Maybe they were right about the things that they said about her, and even more cruel things that I won't even repeat here, but they are worse than you can imagine. Now, eventually, Josh told Megan the world would be better off without her. And she actually died by suicide in her own bedroom, a place that is supposed to be safe, while her parents were downstairs making dinner and discussing ways that they could support her and what they were going to do about this situation. Now, of course, this story is beyond tragic, but unbelievably, it's not even the worst part of the story. The worst part is still to come. Now, it turns out this boy, Josh, who befriended Megan, was not a real person at all. He never existed. He was a digital creation dreamed up by a mother and daughter and some of the daughter's friends who were living four doors down. They created a plan with friends to form this friendship as a joke, and they used information gained to manipulate social circumstances. And so there I was, face to face with Megan's mother, side by side with her healthcare provider, listening to them courageously share their story to prevent other parents from experiencing this kind of pain. Now, Megan's story happened several years ago now, and it happened on the platform MySpace, if you remember that platform. And there were no laws to prevent this or to respond to this. And this was really devastating. So we have now covered the gamut from, you know, the minor to the unthinkable and unimaginable. And parents, the reason that we talk about these things is not to make you terrified, not to make your parenting fear-based, but we are going to be faith-informed. If those things scare you a little, they should, but use that fear as a healthy prompt towards further action. If we worry about it, that's just thinking about the same thing over and over and obsessing and thinking, oh my goodness, is this going to happen to my child? But using it as a prompt means, hey, I need to have conversation to make sure my kid is safe. So let's talk about prevention. You need to monitor online activity very closely during the early stages of social media. Think of it like training wheels. So when they first start to use it, talk about it with them every day. Look at every day what they're posting, what they're doing. We think about this as in, you know, you would never look at your 12-year-old child and just toss them the car keys and say, hey, I know you want to drive. Just go ahead and do it. But be safe. You know, don't do anything dumb out there. We would never do that. But that's what we do when we give our kids social media with no training and no accountability. So the focus is not being on a social media warden with secret spying and unnecessary invasions of their privacy while we hover over every single thing. The goal is to build trust. And as responsibility increases, keep those lines of communication open. So teach them online safety, like how to set their accounts to private, keeping their passwords safe, reporting if they see bullying online. Now, every social media platform has a report option, and it's very easy to click that button to say, hey, I'm going to report this for, you know, bullying behavior. And you can also go to the website cyberbullying.org for a directory of online platform reporting instructions, how to report for Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat, whatever platform that is. And you need to frame this not as, okay, I'm afraid you're going to do something wrong and I'm going to watch you very carefully, but hey, this is something we're going to learn to do well together. And you can leverage their tech savvy skills, because they will know more about the platform than you do, with your experience and wisdom, relationship, your life skills that we have. And so when our kids are posting, we need to teach them to think before they post. That's T-H-I-N-K. T, is it true? H, is it helpful? I, is it inspiring? N, is it necessary? K, is it kind? Now, I'll tell you, when one of my children first got a cell phone, they would post, they learned how to text GIFs or GIFs. If you want to start a really heated debate, ask how you say that, GIF or JIF. And the bottom line answer is either is acceptable, although there are people who feel strongly about that. But, you know, that's like a little animated picture that you send. Well, I started getting spammed with a million of these images, and many of them were downright disrespectful in a mother-child relationship. But did my child understand that? No, they were glorying in the freedom and thinking, oh, this is funny. So we had to, okay, let's take that privilege back. Let's walk that back. You are no longer allowed to text anyone except me until you learn how to do this respectfully and appropriately. For early intervention, you know, the general advice is if there's minor teasing or a minor insult in isolation, it's not the norm of the relationship or a one-time episode of name-calling, that may be appropriate to ignore. But online repeated activity is not going to go away. You have to intervene. And parents struggle with how to enter that space because they think, I don't really know what to do. And it's hard because some of these things we don't want to criminalize. Some of these social problems don't need a criminal solution. They need a social solution first. But the truth is, you've just got to enter this space. And a lot of times, parents can be afraid to do that because your kids will beg you. They will think that this is basically social execution if my parent steps in. But I'll share with you a story I've shared before. My son being in a group text for a sports team. And one of the other moms actually alerted me, go moms, you need a village. You need those parents who are going to call and say, hey, there's a problem going on here. And the online chat was terrible. It was really inappropriate. And so we just stepped right into that space. My husband looked at my son and said, I'm going to respond here. And he said, boys, this is the dad speaking. And your character is way more important than what you're talking about here and these things that you're talking about to boost your football performance, which, by the way, was not true either. Thank you, Google searches for teens. And, you know, my son was not upset about that at all. He was actually relieved. He did not know how to get himself out of that situation. And you know what? It was true that he got ostracized by some of the boys in that group. He was not invited to, he was disinvited from the group chat for one thing, and he was not invited to some of the social circumstances, but he was relieved about that. And while, yeah, it was a little embarrassing, we had told him that would happen before, that we would step into that. And so you need to not be afraid to step into that and to provide coaching and to report things. And some of those things have to be reported. Now, for example, my son thought, well, I don't have to report that because I didn't say anything. Well, he still had access to that chat and what creates an obligation to report. This is one of the tough things about social media, because if you are online and you see things online, like another child threatening another child or threatening violence or self-harm or things like that, your child has the obligation to report that. And if they don't know how to do that, you need to tell them that there is an open door to that. The other thing is that, parents, this is hard because sometimes there can be intersections of criminality. Some of this behavior is criminal. It can rise to the level of stalking or harassment. And so the school can be a good resource to find out, you know, what your rights are. And every state has laws in place where the schools have to respond. But if your kids are homeschooled, then it may be something that you do need to talk to law enforcement about to find out what would happen and what are the boundaries there. The last thing that I'll say is that sometimes your teen may be the aggressor. You might find out that they bullied someone, that they hurt someone online. Now, this may be for retaliation, for a search for social power, or a vengeful angel mindset to protect their friends, their well-meaning, or just mean girl culture, which actually both genders can adopt. And sometimes the truth is teens are just impulsive and thoughtless, and they don't think through the consequences of their decisions. They may genuinely not see that their behavior is harmful. So don't jump to generalize behavior to their character. Recognize that you're a good kid who made a poor choice, and you can help them restore that and make that right. Help them to understand that in cancel culture, where they think one bad thing can cancel them forever, that there is grace and redemption in something as simple as, I'm sorry I did that. Please forgive me. Let me make it right. And if they shamed you publicly, if your child shames someone publicly, then that should be made right publicly and put that apology out there. Well, those are the questions for today. Tune in every Friday for Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday and continue to send in your questions, and we'll be your guide on the side. See you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.